light showers and the odd shower turning up elsewhere across the Highlands as well. Otherwise, it's a largely dry story. A noticeable breeze from the southwest, but temperatures once again getting up into the mid to high teens, so a pleasantly warm day. As we go through Saturday night, clear spells across England and Wales allowing temperatures to drop a little bit lower and perhaps a greater risk of seeing some fog patches turning up as well. A change though for Scotland and Northern Ireland, the wind's freshening here, outbreaks of rain moving in. So we have got some rain in the forecast for Sunday, edging into southern Scotland, perhaps northernmost parts of England, lingering in parts of Northern Ireland too. But the bulk of England and Wales, another dry day with some bright spells coming through. And temperatures on Sunday generally across the UK, very similar once again, so around the mid to high teens. That's your weekend forecast.
Peter, thanks very much indeed. We'll wish you good night. And we will move on to our book of the week. The Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney, who died last month, reads the fifth part of his translation of the epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. Hrothgar, king of the Danes, has held a victory feast in the mead hall to celebrate Beowulf's defeat of the evil monster Grendel. The drinking, present giving and storytelling carry on late into the night until everyone is exhausted.
They went to sleep, and one paid dearly for his night's ease, as had happened to them often ever since Grendel occupied the gold hall, committing evil until the end came, death after his crimes. Then it became clear, obvious to everyone once the fight was over, that an avenger lurked and was still alive, grimly biding time. Grendel's mother, monstrous hell bride, brooded on her wrongs. She had been forced down into fearful waters, the cold depths, after Cain had killed his father's son, felled his own brother with a sword. Branded an outlaw, marked by having murdered, he moved into the wilds, shunned company and joy. And from Cain there sprang misbegotten spirits, among them Grendel, the banished and accursed. But now his mother had sallied forth on a savage journey, grief-racked and ravenous, desperate for revenge. She came to Heorot. There, inside the hall, Danes lay asleep, earls who would soon know a great reversal, once Grendel's mother attacked and entered. Then in the hall, hard-honed blades were grabbed from the bench, many a broad shield lifted and braced. There was little thought of helmets or woven mail when they woke in terror. The Helldam was in panic, desperate to get out. In mortal terror the moment she was found. She had pounced and taken one of the retainers in a tight hold, then headed for the fen. To Hrothgar, this man was the most beloved of the friends he trusted between the two seas. She had done away with a great warrior, ambushed him at rest. Beowulf was elsewhere. Earlier, after the award of the treasure, the Geat had been given another lodging. There was uproar and Heorot. She had snatched their trophy, Grendel's bloodied hand. It was a fresh blow to the afflicted bonne. The bargain was hard, both parties having to pay with the lives of friends. And the old lord, the grey-haired warrior, was heart sore and weary when he heard the news. His highest placed adviser, his dearest companion, was dead and gone. Beowulf was quickly brought to the chamber. The winner of fights, the arch-warrior, came first footing in with his fellow troops to where the king in his wisdom waited, still wondering whether Almighty God would ever turn the tide of his misfortunes. So Beowulf entered with his band in attendance, and the wooden floorboards banged and rang as he advanced, hurrying to address the Prince of the Ingwins, asking if he'd rested, since the urgent summons had come as a surprise. Then Hrothgar, the shielding's helmet, spoke. Rest! What is rest? Sorrow has returned. Alas for the Danes! Eshery is dead. He was Irminlaf's elder brother and a soulmate to me, a true mentor, my right-hand man when the ranks clashed and our boar crests had to take a battering in the line of action. Ashery was everything the world admires in a wise man and a friend. Then this roaming killer came in a fury and slaughtered him in Heorot. Where she is hiding, glutting on the corpse and glorying in her escape, I cannot tell. She has taken up the feud because of last night when you killed Grendel, wrestled and racked him in ruinous combat, since for too long he had terrorized us with his depredations. He died in battle, paid with his life. And now this powerful other one arrives, this force for evil, driven to avenge her kinsman's death. I have heard it said by my people in Hall, counselors who live in the upland country, that they have seen two such creatures prowling the moors, huge marauders from some other world. One of these things, as far as anyone can ever discern, looks like a woman. The other, warped in the shape of a man, moves beyond the pale, bigger than any man, an unnatural birth called Grendel by the country people in former days. They are fatherless creatures, and their whole ancestry is hidden in a past of demons and ghosts. They dwell apart among wolves on the hills, on windswept crags and treacherous caches, where cool streams pour down the mountain and disappear under mist and moorland. A few miles from here, a frost-stiffened wood waits and keeps watch above a mere. The overhanging bank is a maze of tree roots mirrored in its surface. At night there, something uncanny happens. The water burns, and the mere bottom has never been sounded by the sons of men. On its bank, the heather stepper halts. The hart in flight from pursuing hounds will turn to face them with firm-set horns and die in the wood rather than dive beneath its surface. That is no good place. When wind blows up and stormy weather makes clouds scud and the skies weep, out of its depths a dirty surge is pitched towards the heavens. Now help depends again on you, and on you alone. The gap of danger where the demon waits is still unknown to you. Seek it if you dare. I will compensate you for settling the feud as I did the last time with lavish wealth, coffers of coiled gold, if you come back. Beowulf, the son of Eadsthil, spoke. Wise sir, do not grieve. It is always better to avenge dear ones than to indulge in mourning. For every one of us, living in this world means waiting for our end. Let whoever can win glory before death. When a warrior is gone, that will be his best and only bulwark. So arise, my lord, and let us immediately set forth on the trail of this trolldam. I guarantee you, she will not get away, not to dens underground, nor upland groves, nor the ocean floor. She'll have nowhere to flee to. Endure your troubles today. Bear up and be the man I expect you to be. With that, the old lord sprang to his feet and praised God for Beowulf's pledge. Then a bit and halter were brought for his horse with the plaited mane. The wise king mounted the royal saddle and rode out in style with a force of shield-bearers. The forest paths were marked all over with the monster's tracks, her trail on the ground wherever she had gone across the dark moors, dragging away the body of that thane, Hrothgar's best counsellor and overseer of the country. So the noble prince proceeded undismayed, up fells and screes, along narrow footpaths and ways where they were forced into single file, ledges on cliffs above lairs of water monsters. He went in front with a few men, good judges of the lie of the land, and suddenly discovered the dismal wood, mountain trees growing out at an angle above grey stones. The bloodshot water surged underneath. It was a sore blow to all of the Danes, friends of the Scyldings, a hurt to each and every one of that noble company when they came upon Asheri's head at the foot of the cliff. Everybody gazed as the hot gore kept wallowing up and an urgent war horn repeated its notes. The whole party sat down to watch. The water was infested with all kinds of reptiles. There were writhing sea dragons and monsters slouching on slopes by the cliff, serpents and wild things such as those that often surface at dawn to roam the sail road and doom the voyage. Down they plunged, lashing in anger at the loud call of the battle bugle. An arrow from the bow of the Geat chief got one of them as he surged to the surface. The seasoned shaft went in deep, and his freedom in the water got less and less. It was his last swim. He was swiftly overwhelmed in the shallows, prodded by barbed boar spears, cornered, beaten, pulled up on the bank. A strange lake birth, a loathsome catch men gazed at in awe. Beowulf got ready, donned his war gear, indifferent to death. His mighty, hand-forged, fine-webbed mail would soon meet with the menace underwater. It would keep the bone cage of his body safe. No enemy's clasp could crush him in it. No vicious armlock choke his life out. To guard his head, he had a glittering helmet that was due to be muddied on the mere bottom and blurred in the upswirl. It was of beaten gold, princely headgear, hooped and hasped by a weaponsmith who had worked wonders in days gone by and embellished it with boar shapes. Since then it had resisted every sword. And another item, lent by Unferth at that moment, was of no small importance. The Brehon handed him a hilted weapon, a rare and ancient sword named Hrunting. The iron blade with its ill-boding patterns had been tempered in blood. It had never failed the hand of anyone who hefted it in battle, anyone who had fought and faced the worst in the gap of danger. This was not the first time it had been called to perform heroic feats. Beowulf, son of Ecgtheow, spoke. Wisest of kings, now that I have come to the point of action, I ask you to recall what we said earlier, that you, son of Halfdane and gold friend to retainers, that you, if I should fall and suffer death while serving in your cause, would act like a father to me afterwards. If this combat kills me, take care of my young company, my comrades in arms. And be sure also, my beloved Hrothgar, to send Healak the treasures I received. Let the Lord of the Geats gaze on that gold. Let Hrethel's son take note of it and see that I found a ring-giver of rare magnificence and enjoyed the good of his generosity. And Unferth is to have what I inherited. To that far-famed man I bequeath my own sharp-honed, wave-sheened wonder-blade. With Hrunting I shall gain glory or die. After these words, the Prince of the Weathergeats was impatient to be away and plunged suddenly. Without further ado, he dived into the heaving depths of the lake. It was the best part of a day before he could see the solid bottom.
Seamus Heaney was reading from his translation of the great Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf, and the story continues in part 6, which you can hear at the same time on Monday evening. Beowulf was produced in Salford by Susan Roberts. And incidentally, there's an appreciation of Seamus Heaney's life and work in tomorrow evening's Archive on 4. Fintan O'Toole assesses him alongside his fellow Irish poet W.B. Yeats. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Well, the shipping forecast is next this evening, but we can't do that until we've had a bit of this. And so now the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 5th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, high Trafalgar, 1021, expected South East Fitzroy, 1026 by 1800 Saturday. Atlantic low, moving rather quickly northeastwards, expected 400 miles west of Bailey, 985 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Southwest Viking, westerly, backing southerly, 5 or 6, occasionally 7 later. Showers, good, occasionally moderate. Northeast Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, southeasterly, 6 to gale 8, veering westerly, 5 or 6, then backing southerly later. Rain and fog patches at first, moderate, occasionally very poor at first.